Good afternoon and welcome to Campus Connection. I'm reporter Rachel Cassandra, and we're going to talk about the school board agenda today. I'm joined by Erica Klutpainter and Sarah Holmgren. Erica is the superintendent and Sarah is chair of the school board. We'll be talking about the agenda today. The meeting is at 6 tonight. Normally, KFSK broadcasts that live, but we won't be today because it conflicts with the assembly meeting, but we will be posting the recording online in our archives, so you can listen there. Hi, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Good to see
you. Yeah, so, lots of interesting stuff that you'll be talking about today. Do you want to talk about the calendar first? Is that worth discussing before the discussion today?
Sure, I think that's fine, and certainly mm-hmm. Sarah can
jump in here too. That's okay. I was wondering, I could hear it, feel it. So, okay, you can hear me now. So, yes, we started a very, very preliminary conversation in December, and we want to continue the discussion this month and then move forward with an actual vote in February. Some discussion that came up in December talking about kind of the Friday release conversation for professional development came up, although that's not solely a calendar issue, but it came up. And then just talking about, you know, maybe making some adjustments or accommodations for some of the travel that does happen during the winter months. And if there's a way that we can try to meet, you know, maybe meet people where they are with regard, you know, trying to acknowledge that we know that there's, you know, sometimes there's things that just happen and come up and people need to travel, but also trying to help people understand that we are definitely dealing with some pretty significant attendance issues this year, I think, just coming out of COVID. So hence the work session tonight. So it's kind of a conversation about the calendars and that, I guess, maybe together. So I don't know if Sarah wants to add anything.
Well, and I think for some board members, the READS Act might still be somewhat fresh because, to be honest, we started talking about it a good year ago, knowing that it was going, or before it got passed, but then just kind of getting into the nitty-gritty, like realizing that attendance is going to be part of that and that schools, although we have zero control over whether students come to school or not, will be graded and essentially graded on our attendance levels. Is, I think, the future, unfortunately.
Yeah,
and so that's what's terrifying for, you know, administrators and teachers, but also as board members, that like a lot of things, to be judged on something that you don't have the control over. And maybe just by educating parents to try and make more of an effort to align those vacations with the designated vacations throughout the school year, because of that, it's going to start affecting how we're ranked. You know, and to me, that's a false understanding of how well our schools are doing, but it's a reality that's in the future. So,
yeah, and I think just that we really, you know, the last few years have been so incredibly challenging, and Alaska is unique in some regards, just because we live on an island, and how do you get off and on the island? It's on a plane, it's on a boat, and it's not like you just drive to the next town and go to a doctor's appointment and come back and go to school the next day if you have a medical trip or, you know, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. I think addressing those pieces and then also just addressing, I think coming out of COVID, you know, people were so cooped up. They hadn't seen family, you know, all of those things happened. And I just think we've kind of, we've gone down a bit of a slippery slope since then, as far as just, you know, because even we as a school just said, you know what, we get it. I mean, we get it. People haven't seen family. They haven't been off this island. We totally understand it. But I think it's kind of continued. We've had we're really seeing a lot of trips, a lot of vacations that are, you know, not just a week, but even two and three, and just trying to work around that, you know, within the school setting and still provide the quality education that we know our kids deserve, and also trying to acknowledge that we know there's things that come up in people's lives. So I think just having a good conversation at the board level, a good work session about it will be helpful. And then I think trying to, as Sarah said, just help parents understand what that impact might look like, not just for their own kid, but sort of in the class in general. And then just that, you know, it's important moving forward with some of these pieces with the READS Act too. So kind of a large conversation, but
was something that we just didn't want to overwhelm the entire board meeting with.
Right.
And then usually, you know, during a work session, of course, it's a little more relaxed. People can just, no, of course, no decisions are made. It's just more of a nice, we're all together. Let's have a conversation about this.
Yeah.
And especially for those that are listening that might not necessarily be concerned with that, then it's off to the side. They can, you know, come to the work section later, you know, after we're done and listen to it then, or if they want more information, especially if they can't make maybe even the Friday. Designated time. So
yeah, talking about the REEDS Act and all that. So
yeah, and I had thought that attendance would just impact learning, but so you're saying in terms of the REEDS Act,
that's what I
schools
thought. Maybe I'm misunderstanding it.
I think what you're saying, Sarah, is there's a component when we are doing the progress monitoring and the assessments with the screener, that a component of that is when we meet, we're required to obviously communicate that with parents and results and that sort of thing. And if students are not, if they're lacking skills and they're not at that proficiency level, part of that conversation is to look at all of that, you know. So
I see.
Is there a component of attendance in addition to maybe, you know, which could mean lack of instruction, because, you know, as we've said, I think on these conversations too, it's pretty nearly impossible to, you know, recreate like a first grade reading lesson.
Absolutely.
You know,
when
kind
people
of at
are
home.
On vacation.
Yeah. Even when parents are very well intentioned and plan ahead and are really supportive, good people, you know, like it's not that. It's just pretty hard, pretty challenging to recreate that. So
absolutely.
It's a component of that that needs to be considered. And then when kids, the way the proposed legislation is, and I keep saying proposed because it is still proposed, but as far as the regs for it, the regulations, but is looking at that third grade component when you get, you know, each year you have the conversations with families and then you get to that third grade and then there's sort of this really, sort of, it really gets more,
that's the reckoning time.
Sort of more important, in that sense of trying to have that whole picture. And so I think just helping families understand that, while we're not trying to judge the trips or the decisions, but there is sort of a cumulative impact that can happen with students if they miss sort of like a week and then it's two and then it's five and then it's eight and it's 10. You know, by the time you kind of look at that over time, those holes can be pretty hard to fill. Doesn't mean they can't be eventually, you know, with time, but they're hard to fill. And so you have a conversation when they reach that third grade point, if they're not where they need to be. And a part of that is, then that's a component, is looking at that attendance piece and what role might that play. And then the proposed regulations right now are requiring at that juncture, if a family makes a decision, you know, you have the meeting and they make a decision to, that they want their child to go on to the fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
There's a requirement right now to have an additional, 20 hours of support and continued monitoring. So it's really
again,
just to
not
everybody.
A school requirement, although it's strongly encouraged, it is a REEDS Act. So if their issue is with that, they need to talk to the legislator,
right,
representatives on that component, because, you know, you can write this legislation, but if you don't have any, like we talked about, teeth, you know, what's the point?
Yeah.
It just feels like busy work almost.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Yeah. And I think it's also, as Sarah has said multiple times, and I know we talk about this as staff, as well, educators, you know, you want it to be something that is functional and helpful for kids and families, and that it isn't just about sort of like a punitive piece or a consequence
Absolutely.
Piece.
Absolutely.
But actually, and that's the approach I'm trying to take too. And I think our board is, I think our educators are as well. Trying to look at it, okay, it's here. What do we take as the best practices from this that we know are good for, you know, what's important about providing good quality instruction for our students and helping them with those interventions and helping them get where they need to be? Because again, the goal's never been different. I mean, we've all acknowledged the third grade piece. I think it's gotten so structured and so kind of regimented for us that we are concerned about that, the time that is going to take. There are lots of pieces there that we're concerned about. And then as we talked about with you, and some, it was referenced somewhat in the piece you did last week, there will be there's a time component and there will be a financial component to this, because people have to do the work. I mean, you have to have people that do the interventions and meet with the families and
summer school.
And do all the things that we know are good. But we already knew those things were good. We already provide summer school, we do have interventions in place for kids, you know, so I think it's just trying to meld this in a way that is really going to be functional and not overwhelm people to the point, trying to take, I guess, bite the elephant one bite at a time or whatever, not trying to swallow the whole thing. So,
yeah, and anyway. At least other communities in Alaska are figuring this out too. So.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways Petersburg's ahead of the curve on that because we have such competent staff that have been thinking about this for over a year or more. Mm-hmm. And just being at the school board conference in November and realizing some districts never were fully staffed, had a 40% turnover rate, and yet now here. Figure it out.
Yeah. And now here's
and if
this.
You don't have a reading specialist at all in your district, you get to do one online with the Department of Education, which, you know, it's just, I feel for some of these school districts that are, and the kids that are, you know, it's not that they don't want their kids reading at third grade level. We all do. We've had our own experiences in my own house in the varying degrees of level of competency by third grade. And sometimes it's just the kid.
Yeah.
Which is frustrating because I don't think the Reads Act takes that into play. And I actually asked them, have you considered anything about the learning loss that has gone on the last 2 years on what a third grade reading level really is now versus what it was pre-pandemic? And they said, no, they're going off of pre-pandemic levels. So you've got our third graders who were kindergartners when it all started. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you'll see a more maybe evening out now because you have your preschool kids that, you know, they were home already or they were in childcare already, but you still have that group of kids that will continue to try and catch up at no fault of their own necessarily.
Right. For several years.
Yeah. But we're going to be held to some standard that was set long before.
Yeah.
So you can tell how much I love this.
Yeah. And it's also,
I'm just frustrated by it. But
for the kids who are catching up, it also could have emotional components. There could be other stuff. And I know COVID really impacted emotional health of mental health of students. So, you know, it's just a lot at an intense time.
Yeah. And I would agree with you. And I think that's also where we just have to also slow down and know that there's a lot of research out there about retention and it's not favorable. And so, you know, I said this during the session we had last Friday, the first conversation we had with parents and some community members on Friday related to that, you know, the research is overwhelmingly not in support of retention. And so
holding kids back.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's not new research. And so I think a decision to do that would need to be made very, very sparingly and very strategically and very carefully. And I would say that's how it's been here in the past. There have been kids that have been retained in like kindergarten, usually often at the request of a family, like maybe their child came in very, very young, made the cutoff, but was very young. I mean, there can be lots of reasons. Maybe they had to have a family. They had to leave there's things, you know, that happen that actually make sense, you know.
But it's like a holistic picture where you're saying, where is this kid emotionally, you know, socially?
All of it.
With math, reading,
absolutely.
Science. Yeah.
So. Absolutely. So I think we have to be very strategic in how we're approaching that and those conversations that we're having with families. And again, that's not a bad thing. That part of the Reads Act and having conversations with families, monitoring how their kids are doing, providing them information. That's all good. It's all good, you know, but, it's time and making the time to have those good, real, honest conversations as well. It takes time, you know, so it's going to be
money with teachers.
Yeah. And they want to do it well. And they're also not just doing that. They're teaching math. They're providing lots of other, important, you know,
and
pieces.
Have other students in their class.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we'll get there.
Yeah.
We're getting there. We'll get there. But we appreciate people that were able to come last Friday to the conversation that we had. I think they really appreciated it. We had good feedback. Had about 25 people probably that came, which was great. And then we'll do another one Friday morning at 9. We'll have donuts and coffee. We had soup and bread last Friday, and then we'll do pizza next Tuesday night. So it was good conversations, I think.
What did you notice that families were most concerned about or didn't understand?
I think that there were definitely questions about the retention component or those conversations, those meetings, those timelines. There's a lot of timelines associated with it all. So, I think we were able to explain all those things too, and also to explain what rights parents have within that conversation. I think that was helpful for them. And then also to help paint the picture of some of those impacts that are not really spelled out in the act per se about, like, I keep coming back to this, but the time, there are requirements for teachers with regard to another class that's going to be required or a reading praxis exam. That's another piece. The department is creating a class, and again, the class will probably be great. I mean, most elementary teachers I know can talk reading instruction all day long, so that's not uninteresting to any of us that are elementary folks. But time to take the class, and when does that happen, and when is it required to be finished, completed? Initially, they just started talking about that being by the time school starts in 2023. Well, they're moving that deadline out. So I think there's room. I think they're hearing some of the things that we're also pushing back on as far as just the pure logistics. Like, I mean, really, even the timeline of this, they get their packet in January. There's feedback February, March. The final regs won't be adopted by the state board until April, which really means May, which means it's June. And then it's summer, and then it's August, and then we're here. So it's like, okay,
yeah,
we're good, and we're like ahead of the game to the extent that we can be ahead of the game. But really, I mean, that time frame is
very tight.
And as Sarah said, we're fortunate because we're staffed. We have a reading specialist here. We are staffed. We have we have educators and administrators that have been focused on this for years now. So.
And the school performs really well compared to a lot in the state, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. I'm just really feeling for schools who are in that bottom 25%, and then
right.
they have more components required, and mm-hmm. yeah.
And that they couldn't even staff their classes
right.
last year, so it's not getting better.
Yeah.
They're not going to, I just think of, you know, between the retirement program for teachers and trying to woo people to the state.
Mm-hmm. With the inflation rates.
We're going to be in a world of hurt in a lot of school districts.
Yeah, we are. Which brings us to more conversations about money.
It's always about that.
Are there things that you all want to talk about next? I have a whole list, but...
Okay. Well, I could bring up a real quick thing just about that, just saying that I know, you know, we're starting conversations with our borough manager and finance director as well, just starting those preliminary conversations with them, which we always do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we're going to be setting those up. We do want to have some budget work sessions also with the board, and that those will be open to, you know, again, to people to come listen or submit, letters or information, that kind of thing to us, to the board. We are going to be, Karen Morrison, the finance director, and I will be going to the legislative fly-in the end of February to do some lobbying. And there's some very focused lobbying efforts that we're being asked mm-hmm. to participate in as far as making a very clear picture about what is really going on in the financial part of our districts with flat funding since 2017 and this ridiculously high inflation rate. I mean, this consumer price index, which is upwards of 15%. And I don't know if you've seen the Anchorage Daily News article that came out. I think it was Friday, maybe. I can't keep my dates straight. Basically what we as districts are really being asked to do and are trying to pull together is what's the number, right? I think Governor Dunleavy said that in his press conference when he laid his budget out in December 16th, you know, well, this is just a starting point. What's the number? Okay. We're going to figure out the number. So, Anchorage put theirs out already. And I think they said if they were going to try to, and this isn't necessarily to go above and beyond. This is literally to try to be made whole to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've put out a number of 860 on top of the 5960 base student allocation that's currently allotted. And they've said their number per student to increase would be 860.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a 15% increase is what they're basing it off of.
And that's to cover inflation and
that's just to get sort of
today.
Into a whole. Yeah, yeah. That's not necessarily reinstating programs, things like that.
But it's to cover REEDS Act requirements.
Well, or just in general, just the budget deficits that people are facing due to the number of reasons that Sarah just mentioned and that we've talked about, you know, multiple times. There's going to be requirements around training and, but also just this whole recruitment retention issue and people potentially, you know, just saying, you know what, the salaries are not where they need to be in this state for me, the retirement system, and some of these other challenges, you know, that we're trying to come out of COVID and all these other pieces, you know, that are challenging. So we will be definitely talking to the borough about our funding, but their contribution to us, and we'll be asking for an increase, and we're definitely going to do our part to lobby so the state does its job, as well for our kids. So it's time.
Yeah, and so I don't know if that's correct, but in the agenda it said you all will also be asking for $860. Is that right?
Not necessarily $860. Okay. That's what
you're not sure.
Yeah, yeah. It will have to kind of, we got to go through all of our pieces and parts. But
whatever that is, mm-hmm. whatever increase you request, that'll be on top of the meager $30.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was,
yes.
That was just laughable. Sorry.
It really is. Yeah.
It almost felt like just, yeah. Anyway.
Kind of a slap, really. So, just a pittance. So, you know, so I will also say that after I was very encouraged after the governor's budget was laid out in December to hear that the media questions, I felt like about, I don't know, I it seemed to me like 75-80% of the questions kept coming back to specifically what are you going to do about to address the learning loss and the budget issues in districts because of the multiple years of flat funding or very minimal funding. I mean, I was very encouraged. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's an important issue. I think our legislators actually have it as a pretty high priority this year as a large group, which is not necessarily always the case. So I'm encouraged about that. I don't know where it will land, but, you know, I think the landscape looks a little better.
I think when finally Anchorage starts getting affected, then they start listening. That's what it feels like. Mm-hmm. And it has been in the past. But we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get some optimism in me.
Yes. We will. I think the collective, I feel like there's more of a collective focus on it as a state, and certainly our districts have already been there, but I feel like just as a state, I think people are grasping, and also after COVID, realizing how important their child's education and school really is, and not that people didn't know before,
but when you try and do it yourself, you realize how difficult it is.
Yeah.
Or I wouldn't say do it ourselves, but we were trying to help because obviously the teacher, you know, they couldn't be in the classroom. And that's when you realized, oh, yeah, I can't do this on any, for me at least, it was like, I can't do this on any level.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm really worried about the learning loss, not only my own child, but I'm sure other families that are struggling like I am or worse, not getting any sort of instruction because their parent, you know, their caregivers are gone working all day or aren't capable of helping.
Yeah.
And so that just hasn't been addressed, I think, on the state level at all.
Agreed.
And we've done our best locally, but it still takes money to do some of those things.
Absolutely. So I think collectively, I feel like there's a more concerted effort, higher priority for everybody, which I think is good. I'm trying to be optimistic as well. I'm feeling more encouraged about that. So we'll see where it goes.
I think. anything else that you all want to talk about? You got the vape sensors installed. I'm sure there's probably been nothing.
We have not had any. We did. We had an alarm. One was set off that was just installed in the shop. We're doing actually some air quality testing in there.
To see what's that putting it
well,
on.
Well, we actually, yeah, then anyway, so we know what happened with that and we're addressing that issue. But so far, the rest of them, I mean, that's good. That's good news.
Yeah, they're
that's
not going
news.
Off.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a deterrent, so great.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess we'll wrap up then. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you to both of you for joining me for Campus Connect. So I'm reporter Rachel Cassandra, and today we heard from Superintendent Erica Klutpainter and school board chair Sarah Holmgren.